The preacher sought catch up the words of delight, the words which are faithful and written upright. As goads, cattle prods are the wisest word hoards, like nails driven in by a master of boards. That is Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 10 and 11. The version of Yours Truly from 2004, our daily scripture for today, little children. I've had a very busy day today. Yeah, I've been thinking recently, like the issue of blood transfusions was mentioned the other day, and how Jehovah's Witnesses often fight in the court systems to defend their members against doctors who impose blood transfusions on them against their will. And I was, you know, it just occurs to me that something that is the most obvious thing to me, and I know most, or the general public, most people, I believe most people will probably think more similarly to the way the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses thinks, that people have a right to get the health care that they want. I think more people will think that, you know, but then otherwise. I mean, I think that's a, or that will be a commonly held view by people who believe in freedom, that they should have the freedom to choose their own treatment and so on. I don't think that's a revolutionary thought. But the thing that I believe, the thing that occurs to me, is that if you don't want the health care that is going to be provided for you by the hospital, doesn't matter what the treatment is that you may or may not want, if you don't want the care that they provide, whether it's what you want or not, you know, I mean, the fact that they believe it's best for you, that's the point. If they believe it's best for you and you don't want the treatment that they believe is best for you, then don't go to the hospital. It's that simple. Don't go there if you're not willing to have them administer what they believe is right, because you can't. And I'm not saying I'm not in favor of blood transfusions. I'm saying that you can't stop somebody from doing what they believe is right. Like, that's what I'm saying. And you can't convert them to a new religion overnight, or in 5 minutes, or in 2 minutes, in 1 minute, in 30 seconds. You can't convert somebody to your viewpoint. So the solution to this not having blood transfusions forced upon you is, don't go there. Don't go to the hospital. Just don't go there. Seek some other kind of care, or, you know, self-care or something like that. I discovered a new important nutritional supplement just yesterday, I believe, it was a few days ago, but yesterday I ordered it and received it today. I ordered it and got it and took one. It's alpha-lipoic acid, ALA, but it recycles vitamin E. So if you're taking vitamin E, which I am already, but if you are taking vitamin E, this works really well with vitamin E as well. And I mean, none of these supplements should be taken by pregnant women or babies, or, you know, think, if you don't know what you're doing, or whatever, people who are in compromised positions, like, for example, alcoholics shouldn't take certain nutrients. I think it might be alpha-lipoic acid. It's one that alcoholics have to be aware of. I'm not sure now. I forget. But I read recently about the alcoholics. I think that's why it must have been the alpha-lipoic acid. But I'm not an alcoholic. I don't consume alcohol. So for me, I didn't pay much attention to it for that reason. So, but Gudea of Lagash, biblical Keter Leomer, in our article, the Ark of Urartu, we have a statue. We have many, I believe, statues of Gudea. I think that's true. This is only one. Gudea of Lagash. And we have this person in the Bible called Keter Leomer, or Kodologomor, in some translations. Keter Leomer in other translations, it's from Genesis chapter 14. I know that by heart. Now it came about in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is to say, Zoar. All these marched as allies to the low plain of Siddim, that is, the Salt Sea. And then 12 years, it says, they served. Yeah, I was just outside shopping, and probably that my allergies got triggered a little bit. But the air quality outside can sometimes be better than indoors. I mean, as far as pollen goes, even when you have all the filters in your house running, it's just that the pollen builds up in your house where it doesn't, the air can be fresh outside without pollen in it. But I don't think I'm really very, I'm not allergic at all, really. I just don't know. I think it was the fact that I went out, though, that got my system exposed to something in the air, probably pollen. 12 years they had served Chedorlaomer, but the 13th year they rebelled. Now, the amazing thing about this whole thing is, we're going to find out more about this as we go on in our study, I believe. But this 12 years, the 13th year they rebelled, and then we compare that with the book of Jasher, is what I did. In the article as well, I think I talk about that. Well, I know I talk about it in more than one article, but the question is, you know, let's look that up, actually, if we can. I haven't read this. We're into a very long study today. This paragraph is very long. I've been so busy today, I didn't know how long. Look at this, the 2146, you see this? So the amazing thing is, in our chronology, we've dated the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom as 2141 BCE. And we did that using some kind of eclipses or, you know, I mean, we did it using the knowledge of when Babylon was sacked and things like that. We had to find some eclipses that corresponded to it. And I didn't make a big point of that. It's mentioned somewhere. I think it's in the Crucible, possibly, where we talk about the 2141, isn't it? We arrive at 2141. Well, I'll look it up for tomorrow, maybe. Hopefully we'll sort this out more precisely. But it's not, we didn't make a big deal out of it, but the 2141 is arrived at by many different means. It also agrees with a date given by one of the ancient historians. Precisely agrees. I think it's, I'm thinking it might be Africanus, but I'm not absolutely certain. But it's remarkable that we had agreement with somebody at all. It's just incredible. But you can also get agreement, somewhat of a approximate agreement, at least, and sometimes better, by using the Assyrian king's list and adding up how many kings there had been prior to the end of the empire, and then coming back to this date using dead reckoning, as it's called. It's very inaccurate, but sometimes, you know, the records were accurate, it's precise, right? Except maybe if the number of years is rounded off, then there can be round-off error that accumulates over the years. The events of Genesis 14 also. Now, see, 2146 would be there's a five-year difference according to Jasher 13. So have we got Jasher 13 somewhere? I had a reference to Jasher, and I clicked on it the other day, and it worked. We got Jasher here. Where was the reference to Jasher? Yeah, there it is, Jasher 5. So we want Jasher 13 this time. So go to Jasher 13. Right, you see? Yeah, it talks, this is the one, this is the chapter. Chedorlaomer is mentioned in verse 15 of chapter 13 of the book of Jasher. Okay, so Jasher 13, 15. But then you're going to see, that's the end of it. So it's in the 10th year. There it is. War between Nimrod, king of Shinar. The 10th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan. That's the key to the chronology there. There was war between Nimrod, okay? And we know when it tells when Abram moved to the land of Canaan in the book of Jasher also. The 58th year was the end of 3 years of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, it says here. But there's one place where there's an error in the book of Jasher that you have to be careful of, where it makes one mistake that you can easily correct. But I have to be careful. Relying on just one of these verses might not be the working way of doing it. But the 58th year of his life was 3 years after he was dwelling there, which would mean 55 years was when he moved there, and it was 2206 he was born. 55 years from 2206. I can't do this in my head right now. 2206, I should be able to, but minus 55. 2151, right? Right, and so in the 10th year, right, that was 5th year, the people revolted. See that? Verse 11? So that would mean, we just saw that this was his year, first year of dwelling in the land of Canaan, 2151. Let's subtract five more years. Let's not make a mistake of just entering without backspacing first to get into the equation again. Here it is, 2206 minus 55 minus 5. 2146, so that's where the 2146 came from. 2146 was the after 5 years of Abram's dwelling in Canaan. There was this rebellion, and the cities of the plain revolted from the power of Chedorlaomer. 2146, and in the Bible it says they rebelled in the 13th year of Chedorlaomer. Right, so we could add, that was the year of their rebellion, 2146, but we could add 13 or 12 to get back to the first year. 2158 would be year one of Chedorlaomer, you see. And this amazing, the thing about this was, we don't have to do that. We don't really care about what year of Chedorlaomer. What we care about is what year of Abram. 2146 was his 5th year. Okay. Let's go back to the book of Jasher, shall we? Just for a moment here. Now look about this. Now Chedorlaomer, it says, Nimrod fled and returned in shame and disgrace to his land. Okay. Look, Chedorlaomer went to the land of Elam, and Gudea conquered the land of Elam. And this Chedorlaomer, from the book of Jasher, and in the Bible he's also mentioned, but in the book of Jasher he reigned over Elam. And that is almost a dateable, there's an approximate date at least for that date. I think we had it exact, actually, for the date. That's why I thought this was so true. When we used the date given in secular history for Chedorlaomer, and we found that in his 6th year he went to Elam and conquered it, or something like that, which we're going to study. But in the 10th year, it says, of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, there was war. Right? But it was the 5th year when they rebelled. So Chedorlaomer became dominant in the 10th year, but the rebellion occurred in the 5th year. And we found the 5th year was 2206 minus 55, which was year 1 of Abram living in Canaan, 2151 BCE, minus 5, the 5th year when the rebellion of these kings occurred, 2146. And now, instead of the 5th year, let's look at the 10th year, 2141 exactly. See that? So our chronology for the birth of Abram exactly corresponded with the 2141, which was, I believe, the exact same date given by another historian. Let's see if we can find it here. Hang on a second. Let's see if we search for it and find it. 2141. We're not going to be able to cover this whole paragraph probably today, but... Oh, yes, I raised the Sack of Babylon right there. So maybe it's in today's study, the Sack of Babylon point. Yeah, the point about the Sack of Babylon. I'd forgotten that it's in this... I haven't read this recently, so I didn't know that it's in this paragraph. This is remarkable, isn't it? And we've got a quote in this paragraph from the Royal Chronicle of Lagash. Now you see, Chedorlaomer and Gudea of Lagash, they're similar. Gudea of Lagash, Chedorlaomer. Lagash and Laomer. I mean, Laomer is referring to Lagash. And Gudea refers to Keter. Keter, Gudea. So there's similarities enough in the name Chedorlaomer and Gudea that it fits perfectly. But where did I get that from? I'm trying to remember now. The sixth year of his rule, right. Yeah, Gudea claimed to have conquered the city of Anshan. That's what it was. In the sixth year of his rule. That's what it was. Yeah, that's the point that's in this paragraph too. He actually... And Gudea, look, Wikipedia gave a date for Gudea at 2144 at the time I wrote this, which was similar to the 2146 we had for the date of this rebellion, and therefore the date of some importance to this King Gudea. So maybe his the point when he was beginning to become, well, that was the point of rebellion. He had reigned for 13 years prior, right? But he asserted his domination in this year of rebellion. So the 2144 is a remarkable number. I'm not sure what Wikipedia says today. They change every second day. It seems like they change something as though they're reading my articles and trying to be different from what I'm saying. But Gudea claimed to have conquered the city of Anshan and Elam in the sixth year of his rule. That's incredible, because what is year six of him, of Gudea, in other words, is the question. Let me think. Where did I get to that? One way to search for that, okay. There's so many things in this. I don't think reading this paragraph would be that useful. Until I've explained a little bit more about it. But it's useful for me because I'm the one who wrote it, and it documents exactly what I was thinking at that time that I wrote it, and what I believed, because I was basing it on facts, right? I mean, all of it based on facts. I want to look up Elam now, because I want to know Elam. Well, we're even going to talk about the name Gudea and how it relates and so on, the origin of the name. See, the book of Jasher says that he did go and conquer Elam. That was the other thing, right? And from the book of Jasher, where was Jasher? This is it. Yeah, I want to move it closer to what we're looking at so I don't lose it. So the book of Jasher 13, I want that right next to our article. So the book of Jasher 13, how are we doing for time? We're running out of time. So, yeah, it did mention Elam. He went to Elam and reigned over it in 1313 of Jasher. So that was right in the 10th year. He fought Nimrod, and actually Chedorlaomer won that battle, evidently. Right. In those days, in verse 14, he went against Chedorlaomer, and anyway, Nimrod fled in shame in verse 16, so Chedorlaomer won that battle. And then it mentions these other kings that had been mentioned in chapter 14 of Genesis. So it's really incredible. I mean, a great correlation and correspondence here in the two accounts. There are enough similarities to warrant being excited about it. But what excites me, the only thing that excites me is when we can prove the chronology. That's the only thing that's worth anything. Because otherwise it's just a story. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, when it comes to, you can never... The thing about health is nobody knows how the human body works. So people go to doctors and it doesn't matter what anyone says about anything. The doctors... they don't know anything about how the body works. So even if, and it took me a long time to realize that, they don't really know anything about how the body works. So it's all just an illusion in terms of what they believe causes what in the body. And therefore it's dangerous, and people rely on the doctors. They take things like prednisone orally, which is, you know, a steroid and things like that, which is very harmful to you. People take that. My wife took it for... my late wife for quite a while, and I don't think it was beneficial for her at all to take it, but it was an anti-inflammatory they were giving her. But she didn't know anything other than to go to the doctors when she was, you know, having trouble with something like, in that case, her skin. And I never even knew about her skin and the things she'd been taking until much later, like way far later. She even went sort of blind in one eye after she, I'm not sure because I wasn't looking through her eye, but she went sort of blind, at least more blind in one eye because of having an implant. And I looked it up and found out that these steroids can cause bleeding in the eye, increases the risk. So in the small vessels in the eye that can, in the retina, which can cause blindness. And so, but nobody will acknowledge that. If they're the one who caused it, that they don't want to be responsible. Nobody in the medical profession. Now, she went blind because she had an implant. You know, she had the lens, you know, replaced in her eye because she elected to do that. She believed in the healthcare system. But based on what I've learned, I'm not going to profess anything to anyone publicly about that, because that would be a mistake, right? With regard to the public, because the public has no comprehension of anything to do with anyone's personal business or personal belief system to do with health, right? I mean, nobody understands enough that I could profess something publicly about what I believe or don't believe, you know. But I mean, my actions will speak for me about whether I seek to consult any healthcare practitioner ever again. You know, if I never do, then that will say I really didn't have any faith in the healthcare system after a certain point. But in those days, Nimrod saw that these people rebelled, right? And Chedorlaomer defeated Nimrod, actually. And we know that in the 10th year, there was a war between Nimrod and Chedorlaomer. So it looks like it was in the 10th year when Chedorlaomer took over, and that was 2141, and that would be then, Chedorlaomer would be Gudea, also known as Ninus, the king of Assyria, is what we, in the genealogy, speaking for my research, have come to conclude about Gudea, is that he's Ninus. Because Ninus is otherwise, unless you identify him as somebody specific, he's mysterious. He's a somebody who no one knows anything about. Now, Sir Walter Raleigh, is he in here? Sir Walter? It helps if I type it correctly. Sir Walter Raleigh. It's not in this article. Sir Walter Raleigh, I think it was in one of the articles we studied earlier. He mentioned one of these kings that was mentioned in the Bible, book of Genesis, chapter 14. One of those kings, he identified one of those kings as somebody specific, Sir Walter Raleigh. And that helped us identify either the person of Gudea or the time period or something. So this article that we're writing here has 144 paragraphs of 12 sections, 12 paragraphs in each section, and that's not enough room to discuss points outside of our main topic, right? I mean, we just don't have time. A regrettable and necessary lack of beating around the bush. We just can't beat around the bush. While the Bible provides an account of the ages of fathers at the time of Noah's sons' births, it does so only in the line of Shem, while Ham and Japheth are not so documented. As Shem's God, Jehovah has been blessed by Noah, Genesis 9:26. What this means is that Ham and Japheth are shy of record, and what little we may learn must be found out indirectly. More to the point, we may know only what Jehovah gives us. One such gift is an ancient Sumerian tablet, of which only one copy exists, the Royal Chronicle of Lagash. After the flood had swept over and caused the destruction of the earth, when the permanence of humanity had been assured and its descendants preserved, when the black-headed people had risen up again from their clay, and when humanity's name having been given and government having been established, On and Enlil had not yet caused kingship, crown of cities to come down from heaven, something by something Ningirsu, they had not yet put in place the spade, the hoe, the basket, nor the plow that turns the soil for the countless throng of silent people. At that time, the human race, in its carefree infancy, had 100 years. Coming into an advanced age, it had something 100 years. Something without the ability to carry out the required work, its numbers decreased greatly. In the sheepfolds, its sheep and goats died out. At this time, water was short at Lagash. There was famine at Girsu. Canals were not dug. Irrigation ditches were not dredged. Vast lands were not irrigated by a shadoof. Abundant water was not used to dampen meadows and fields. Something humanity counted on rainwater. So that's something that keeps occurring. Seems to refer to something about humanity, doesn't it? Without the ability to carry out work, something 100 years. Something humanity counted on rainwater. Asnan did not bring forth dappled barley. No furrow was plowed nor bore fruit. No country or people made libations of beer or wine. With the beginning of agricultural work, there begins a list here having some 34 kings, ending with one. Gudea, known from other... This is in square brackets, starting with the statement, with the beginning of agricultural work. Known from other sources, Gudea was as a modest conquering king who preferred the lowly title of governor, a famous king of Lagash, believed to be the son-in-law of Urbaba, and who is listed in the Royal Chronicle of Lagash as, and that is where the end of the square bracket is, and then the quote continues, Gudea, younger brother of Urbaba, something, who was not the son of either his mother or father. Curious, he was not the son of either his mother or his father. The younger brother of Urbaba. He's called the younger brother of Urbaba, but didn't we mention that he was believed to be the son-in-law of Urbaba? Also a brother, maybe in a sense of being a relative or a brother of some other spiritual sort. But let's see whether we can think about whether this something recurs to refers to Gudea. I don't think so. Doesn't seem to. So, wait, it could refer to the Assyrian people or something. Not sure. I will want to look that up and see what I can learn more about that. The above quoted document is significant for its possible important link to the biblical patriarch Abraham, where we believe the Gudea is probably Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. Yeah, because he became king of Elam, of course, later on, and it said he was called king of Elam here in Genesis 14, but he only was king of Elam because he went there and conquered it. According to him, and that was from Wikipedia, that they said in his sixth year he claimed to have conquered Elam. The similarity of the words gut and cud, or gut and cud, is significant. In German, kind, kint, or what's that kind? Kint and gut, D and T, sound the same. In archaeology, Chedorlaomer is Kudur Lagomar, translated as, that sounds like Gudea, doesn't it? Kudur, translated as servant of Lagomaru, Wikipedia article Battle of Siddim, is where that's from. However, no such king of Elam is yet known, and yet we see a similarity of Kudur Lagomar to Gudea, ruler of Lagash. See, Lagash and Lagomar. Laomer and Lagomar. That's the same word. So Lagash is almost the same as Lagomar, and that's Gudea of Lagomar. It's like Chedorlaomer. Genealogy deeds. Our chronology is called the genealogy. Genealogy dates Chedorlaomer as 2141 BC. And we read that already, and that's from Jasher, partly. We're saying it's from Jasher 13:12 and the events of Genesis 14 also, as 2146, Jasher 13:11. And we talked about some of this. We're just about out of time for today. But let's see. I want to find out and finish talking about it. We don't have time to do the Thor Heyerdahl just today. But so look at this. Yeah. So the time when Chedorlaomer beat Nimrod in battle was 2141, as we just determined from our chronology using the birth date of Abraham in 2206, right? He used to be called Abram, and then his name was changed to Abraham when he was 99 years old or something, or 100 years old when he had his first son. But Abram is 65th year was 2141, which is exactly the same as what we determined as the date. All of this, well, that would be the 10th year of his arriving, according to the book of Jasher. And so it was perfect. It was perfect as far as establishing the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom. I'm going to look for this and see whether Africanus actually talks about that in this article, but that's it for today. September 30th is today's date, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 2047 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much, and thank you for listening and watching. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.